This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The San Antonio Monument to Confederate Soldiers has become a flashpoint locally. The monument has stood for over 100 years with little controversy, but now it's the center of a red-hot debate about history, oppression, freedom of speech, and civil discourse. The San Antonio City Council is taking up the issue of the removal of that monument. District 2 Councilmember William Cruz Shaw and District 1 Councilmember Roberto Trevino are sponsoring that consideration. I spoke with Trevino yesterday about the process.
First, we want to point out that the relocation of this monument has been an ongoing effort for the past 2 years, working with the Department of Arts and Culture and our Office of Historic Preservation. We've tried different things, and it's always been an issue related to the location and context, and it's come up time and time again that this is a monument to power, something that is it's been very difficult for either department to see a case that can better put it into context there on site. So we filed the CCR, and the CCR will now go to governance, in which case we will have a discussion there to talk about how it moves forward potentially to a city council vote and a prescription of where it goes. Now, I think it's also important that we point out that this is part of a formal process. Going to governance is what most council consideration requests do, and we will have a robust discussion there. I think it'll be something that is going to be very important for us to have a productive discussion before it goes to city council, which will have more discussion. We hope to also have a location of where it can go. We've had many people offer to take it. They can showcase it in better context and in terms of what it means to history, and so in that respect, the statue will not be destroyed, but rather relocated. And we think that's an important piece of this process. And so the other piece is really the discussion. And of course, education is key for understanding this. And we hope that as we move forward as a city, the fact is that we're known as a compassionate city. This is nothing new for us, as of late. We're defending immigration rights. We're protecting free speech. We're creating symbols that are inclusive of many folks, including the LGBTQ community. And so this is very much in line with all those efforts.
CCR, what does that stand for?
I apologize. That is a council consideration request, and that is just jargon for, a policy request or a policy change that we request city council review.
And so it goes to the governance committee?
That is correct.
And why is that significant?
Well, so the governance committee reviews these kind of policy discussions, and then determines whether it would go to a council committee or straight to city council for a vote. The governance committee is chaired by the mayor, Mayor Ron Nirenberg, and joined by four other council members: myself, Councilman Ray Saldana, Councilwoman Rebecca Villagran, and Councilwoman Ana Sandoval.
How important is it that we have an open, transparent dialogue in the city, and this doesn't seem like this was done in backroom politics?
Well, it's critical. I mean, we want to make critically sure that this is part of a formal process, a process that is not trying to hide anything. This is a difficult discussion that we're all willing to have, and we should be able to have it openly, and make sure that the public understands exactly how the city council feels.
Unfortunately, not everyone is willing to engage in peaceful dialogue, and we saw the tragic consequences of that in Charlottesville this past weekend. How are we making sure that this is going to be a safe, open community conversation?
Well, I think it really boils down to every person making sure that we're being very reasonable about what we're discussing, and I think that there's a lot of folks that are wanting to understand and learn more, and of course there are those that don't, and that's okay too. We will have an open and safe discussion with those that are wanting to have that discussion, and we hope to promote a safe environment. We will work with our public safety chief of police and make sure that there's a lot of the issues that we're seeing across the country are not having an impact here in the city. I want to commend SAPD for all that they've done to keep things peaceful. We're hopeful that the dialogue here will be a more robust dialogue. In fact, I would point out that it's okay to have conversations with people that may not agree with you or you may not agree with. And recently we did invite Dr. Atticott to come visit and talk to us and give us his point of view. He spoke at the rally, and before that we met with him and talked with him, and he has a point of view that we disagree with, and of course that's just another good example of how we can have conversations and have disagreements without it being an issue or violent.
And Professor Atticott is at St. Mary's University, and he's an expert on terrorism law.
That is correct.
Okay.
He's a well-respected professor on terrorism and terrorism law, but he has these points of view on this particular monument and the Civil War, and we just disagree.
The accusation is that the city, if they do adopt this removal of the monument to the Confederate dead, that it's an erasure of history. Is there anything that would be done as a follow-up by the city to portray Civil War history in more a complete manner?
So, I mentioned speaking with Dr. Atticott. One of the things we discussed was that his concern was making sure we didn't discard history. And, of course, I think that's where we were in agreement, where we were not – we're not discarding this piece itself. And, history cannot be contained in any one monument. And I think, history is something that we must be committed to telling. And we're certainly focused as a city to help find an appropriate place for this particular monument. And I think we have several pretty good options. Again, working with our Office of Arts and Culture, our Office of Historic Preservation, and, of course, we've even included the Office of Military Affairs in our council consideration request to say that they have a place in having that discussion about the appropriate location.
Is the removal of the statue from the Travis Park, is that a done deal?
Well, no. I mean, it's not a done deal until there's a vote.
You've got the votes or not.
Well, I think I can say that there's broad support for it. There is Senate Bill 112 that is trying to get passed up at the state legislature to stop efforts like these. Of course, we oppose that. What I can say is that as we move forward, these are part of the discussions with other council colleagues and the mayor's office. We're having them on a continual basis, but we think that relocation is the most appropriate point that we're trying to make.
That's District 1 Councilmember Roberto Trevino discussing the City Council's process to consider removal of the Confederate Monument in Travis Park. We're going to open up the phone lines. You can call in to The Source at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're taking a one-minute break, and The Source continues. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're discussing the Confederate Monument in downtown San Antonio. Should it be removed from a public park? Our goal today is to listen to the opposing sides, and hopefully the opposing sides will listen to each other. Let's avoid the violence that has erupted in other communities. We're joined by Patrick Kelly, professor of history at UTSA, John McManaman. He is a president of the Confederate Cemetery Association, and Joy Palacios joins us. He's a reporter for Texas Public Radio, and he's been covering this issue. And we invite you into our conversation. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. So, John McManaman, let me start with you first off. Can you talk about that monument? What does that monument mean to you?
Okay. Yeah. My name is John McManaman.
McManaman.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yes, sir. So what does that monument mean to you?
This monument is very personal to me. It's a cenotaph. It's in remembrance of our Confederate dead. My Confederate ancestors were buried in Vicksburg, Mississippi, in graves that were unmarked. And a cenotaph is what we consider as a marker for those buried in unknown graves. And that's what this is, just like the cenotaph at the Alamo. It represents people that whose graves are not identifiable. So it's very personable to me. It means a lot to me. That's what that cenotaph stands for.
Does that cenotaph and what it stands for, does it have to be at Travis Park?
It was erected there by the United Daughters of the Confederacy. And the reason that it was put there is the 6th Texas Company K formed at the start of the war between the states, and it's very appropriate that that statue is located where those soldiers first formed up, and then as they went into the field and battled and lost their lives, their wives and daughters and children have a place, knowing that they left that place, they have something to remember them by at this location.
But if the statue, the monument is moved to the Confederate cemetery, would it lose any of that meaning that you have?
I don't see the reason that it should be moved. I mean, it's in a historical place. It's in context to how it was built. And so to move it, I really think that the monies and the investment that the city council will be expending on this could be used for other things, possibly for education.
What do you think of the people who say that it should be moved? I mean, do you understand their points of view?
I understand that there are some small groups here in San Antonio that are very loud and very radical. This was displayed Saturday at Travis Park, where they had violent conflicts with the police, and three people were carried away, while at the same time the Sons of Confederate Veterans, the Cemetery Association, the Old 300 group, there were five other Texas historical groups there, including the Daughters of the American Revolution, Sons of the American Revolution, a retired Texas Rangers Association, and all of those people were quietly demonstrating, showing their First Amendment rights in a very peaceable way, and it wasn't noticed on the news, but all of that group thanked the San Antonio police for an outstanding job. I mean, an outstanding job that they did there to preserve the peace, and after those people that were violent were moved away by the police, we felt safe. So I would like to thank Chief McManus for doing an outstanding job in avoiding what happened in Virginia.
Joy Palacios, you were a reporter at the scene of the Travis Park. And so does Mr. McCammons, is his representation of that his side was peaceful and the other side were the ones that were loud? Does that fit what you remember?
Well, both sides have their ups and downs, if you will. There was antagonization on both sides. There were a handful of folks on the Confederate supporter side that were shouting towards the removal supporter side. There were a few things. I remember one woman shouting to others saying, "Go back to Mexico. Why are you here in this country if you don't support it?"
That's race baiting.
It could be. There were others on the Confederate side who were shouting Blue Lives Matter in support of the police. And there were also, there was a group called the Proud Boys on the Confederate side, that were using megaphones to, I think, antagonize the other side. And now the removal side had its share of folks, too, that were antagonizing. They would go over to the Confederate side and try to get a rise out of them. There were two people that had an encounter with SAPD. According to SAPD, when I talked to the chief on Saturday, one person was arrested. It was a 20-year-old man charged with assault. Another person from the removal supporters' side was detained but released by police. Some of the removal side supporters were... Excuse me, I think I have something in my throat right now.
Okay, well, let me give you a chance to clear your throat. And so, Mr. McCammon, so Joey's saying that both sides were agitated.
I would like to qualify what Joey said. He did point out that those people did come over to our side. We stayed in our area, and they came over and were antagonizing them. And that those boys group or whatever they were, I personally talked to them and asked them to put their microphone away because we weren't there for that purpose. And I believe Joey saw me do that. In a situation like that, there were some people that showed up and we asked them to leave. There was another group there, and we're not sure who they were, but they were, to back up what Joey was saying, they were shouting things after the fellas that had on the brown, berets over there. They had been shouting white supremacist, racist, Nazis, and that sort of thing. So I'm sure that was why they were riled up. But we explained to them that that's not why we were there. And we had those two groups quieten down.
We've seen in other parts of the country where white supremacist and Nazi organizations have shown up and they have acted out to defend the monuments. Do you denounce Nazis, group organizations, and white supremacists?
David, I'll have to apologize to my wife. She said the first thing out of my mouth should have been what I would like to say to you right now and everybody listening. It says right here, I've written it down. We denounce in the strongest terms the violence and evil in Virginia. Radical groups such as the KKK and other disgusting racist groups, and they should be subject to the fullest extent of the law. The Sons of Confederate Veterans is a nonprofit, patriotic, historical, civic, and benevolent organization created to preserve the history and legacy of the Confederate soldier so future generations can understand the motives that animated the Southern soldier.
What were the motivations that animated the Southern soldiers? Why was the Civil War fought?
There are many reasons. The reason that comes up everywhere is always slavery. And slavery was a prime cause of the war. But there were multiple facets to that. It wasn't just the South that was involved with the slave issue. All of the slave cotton was, not all of it, because they sold to England too, But the slave cotton was sold to mills in the Northeast, Connecticut, New Hampshire, New York, Rhode Island, all of those places welcomed the cheap slave cotton and used it. And they were also the basis for the slave trade with the triangle.
Okay.
That everyone was taught in high school.
Now, so Patrick Kelly, professor of history at UTSA, when we talk about the cause of the Civil War, is it important that we recognize that slavery was the primary cause that the South, they broke away from the Union in order to preserve slavery?
Well, thanks for having me on first. If your listeners are interested, all they have to do is go on Google and look at the Declaration of Causes for Secession, which was passed by the Texas Secession Convention in February 1861. And there were some marginal issues such as Indian attacks and people on the border. But the central statement of why Texas left the Union in 1861 was to preserve white supremacy. Southern whites were terrified that Lincoln, who was not going to end slavery, he wanted to end slavery over time by containing it where it existed. So Lincoln was willing to let slavery exist for a longer period. He was not elected to go to war against slavery, but he was an abolitionist. He just had different tactics. And Southerners were terrified when an anti-slavery president was elected. Really, the election of 1860 was a genuine revolution. For the first time in U.S. history, you had a abolitionist, although he was quite a moderate abolitionist, at the head of the U.S. government. And this terrified white Southerners. And let me just read a quick line from that Causes for Secession towards the end of it. That this free government, all white men are and of right ought to be entitled to equal civil and political rights, that the servitude of the African race is mutually beneficial to both bond and free, and is abundantly authorized and justified by the experience of mankind and the revealed will of the Almighty Creator. While the destruction of existing relations between the two races, as advocated by our sectional enemies, would bring inevitable calamities upon both and desolation upon the 15 slaveholding states. So the South, without a doubt, left the Union in 1861, to maintain white supremacy and to maintain the institution of slavery.
All right, and that is Patrick Kelly, professor of history at UTSA. We're going to get ready to take a break. We got a lot of callers here who want to join the conversation. We want to give everyone a chance to have their say. What are their thoughts about the Confederate monument, a memorial downtown San Antonio? What should be done with it? How should we remember the South and the Confederacy and the Civil War? And also remember many of our ancestors who were many of them were victimized by the institution of slavery. Many of them fought to preserve Southern heritage. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Frank. I think that the Confederate statue should be left at Travis Park. You know, what's next? Are we going to take down the Washington Monument because Washington had slaves? Or the Jefferson Memorial? Where does all this end?
All right, and that is one of our voicemail callers that we received as we were preparing for the show. And thank you, Frank, for that call. And we're talking about the Confederate Monument downtown San Antonio. While that monument does not honor anyone specifically, it is a general monument, a cenotaph to the Confederate dead. We're joined by John McCammon. He is the president of the Confederate Cemetery Association. And so, John, is that a view that you share, that you're concerned about where this ends?
Yes, I am, definitely. As I said before, this is a grave concern to us because it does fit in with the context of the history of the park, with the Maverick family donating that property. The Maverick family, you know, he was mayor. He helped rebuild the city after the war between the states, and there are other prominent families that supported that monument being put up, including the Hildebrands and the Frost. As you know, Colonel Frost was a colonel in the Confederate Army, and he definitely helped rebuild San Antonio after the war.
Right, that brings up an interesting point. And Professor Patrick Kelly, if you could weigh in on this, you're a professor of history at UTSA. So there are plenty of people who were members of the Confederate Army who did many things. Being in the Confederate forces was just part of their life. And one person comes to my mind is Albert Parsons. He was a Confederate foot soldier, and then he came to San Antonio and he became a labor leader. He married Lucy Gonzalez, a former slave, and he went on to actually be part of the Haymarket Affair in Chicago, and he was hanged as part of the accusation that he bombed, he put a bomb out there. And so he had a very complex history and was on many sides of the political spectrum. And should we just say, well, Albert Parsons was a Confederate soldier, so he should only be remembered in that fashion? So Patrick Kelly, as a historian, what do you say on that?
Well, first of all, I'd say my great-great-great-grandfather fought with Bragg's Army, Confederate general, and died during the Civil War, died of strep throat. So in my own family history, as is true with many Southern whites, there is a direct link to the Confederate Army. I think that's one of the things that makes this so passionate. And it's a genuine historical question. What do you do with ordinary men who are caught up in bigger causes? And in this case, I think very clearly an unjust cause. It's not an easy question to answer, I think. But when it comes to the monument, the way I would contextualize it is this. The monument was built, or it was unveiled, in 1900, just 4 years after Plessy versus Ferguson, the Supreme Court decision that made separate but equal unconstitutional. And what it was sending a message. It was sending a message about memory, about who controlled the memory of the Civil War, who controlled the memory of the Old South. And first of all, it completely erases the story of African Americans in the Old South and building the Old South. But not only in that, the rapes, the lynchings, the whippings of African Americans that occurred, that's completely erased from the story. And it's the monument itself was part of this larger context of creating what's called the Lost Cause myth in the 1890s. That in the Lost Cause myth, slavery was effaced from public memory, or slaves were told, or the story was told that slaves were basically happy with their masters, that white Southerners didn't fight to protect slavery, but much like the American Revolutionaries of 1776, they fought for their home and their hearth and liberty against an oppressive central government, that the South lost because it was defeated by a superior force, not because it was fighting for an unjust cause. And so that's the context that I would put the monument in. I would put it in the Lost Cause context, this kind of justification of the South leaving the Union in 1861 because they were unhappy about the results of a fair and free election, the racial oppression both before and, of course, after the Civil War as well, white supremacy, lynchings that are occurring during this time. So if you put it in that context, I think the statue looks a little bit different.
Okay.
Looks a little bit different.
Let's get some callers in on this conversation. James is on the line. And James, welcome to The Source. You're on the air, sir.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And the timing of this is perfect because I wanted to note what Professor Kelly just said. And so I very much appreciate his making the point that this is not just a Confederate monument. It is a Lost Cause monument. It is a Jim Crow monument. It was meant to terrorize Black people, not memorialize Confederate soldiers. It was meant to intimidate Black people, not commemorate the sacrifice of Confederate soldiers. And so I very much believe that if our city is to attract new residents, that this ongoing acceptance of white supremacy needs to come down. And more importantly, if we are to protect the dignity and the humanity of those who live there now, this needs to come down. And I say this as a white person who very much believes that white supremacy poisons all of us.
All right, James, thank you for the call. I'm going to move on and get Will in on this. And Will, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. It's more like a rewriting of history. You know, just like the trouble that we had here just this last weekend. Everybody wants to yell, okay, it's the white supremacists or the neo-Nazis. What if it was just people that thought trying to erase our history was wrong, which it is? We don't want to relive that Civil War again. My family's been here since 1846. I had family members fight in the Confederacy. A lot of them didn't have a choice. They had to. But they still died for what they believed. And you've got monuments up for Union soldiers. You have monuments up for Confederate soldiers. They need to leave them there so people can remember the war where brother fought brother and father fought son.
All right, Will, thank you for that call. Another caller. This is Ted. And Ted, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for the panel. I was attending I actually attended and worked downtown, so I was able to actually see from my building much of Travis Park. I noticed that a number of the pro-Confederate side carried long rifles. They actually came armed to this supposedly peaceful demonstration. I'd like to ask why, if this was a peaceful demonstration, they showed up armed, and why they thought it was necessary, and why they don't think that that is, in fact, antagonizing to people.
All right, Ted, thank you for that call. So, I'm going to ask you, John, about the appearance of, you had the militia members that were there, and they were in full gear. They looked like they were ready to engage in fights.
Since there had been violence in other rallies, and people had been hurt, and they had been attacked by Black Lives Matter, it was a coordination with a group that was providing internal security. And just so that the caller knows, that our group paid to have our operations there safe by providing money to the San Antonio Police Department, and that was a requirement. And then we also had insurance there, liability purposes, and that was required, and we paid for that also. So that was for internal operations, and they worked with the San Antonio police, and it was very peaceful on our side.
Joey Palacios, did you see the weapons that were carried by, was that on both sides? Did both sides have long guns?
The only side that I saw that had actual guns, firearms, was the Confederate side. On the removal side, there were some protesters who had shields. They had their face covered. They had what looked like maybe some things that could strike somebody if needed. Those folks, the ones wearing the masks with the shields on the removal side, were the ones that seemed to be antagonizing the police. They were saying things along the lines of, who deports the families? Pigs do, was one of the chants they were doing when they actually got into the confrontation with SAPD and one person was arrested there.
Now, John McCammon, when we spoke earlier, asked you about if you understood the point of view of those who want the removal of the statue, the monument. I don't think I really got an answer from you. So I really like to try and go back to that again. Do you have any idea of what the other view is? If you are an African-American here in San Antonio and you may have a different way of seeing that monument than you do, do you understand that?
Well, I think the professor made that very clear in his myth theory. So yes, I can understand how they might think that. Yes, I do understand that. But you also have to realize that the ones that are making so much noise, it comes down to the Black Lives Matter group, and they keep saying it's white supremacists, and also the professor mentioned white supremacists, and it's not just the South. If I could just say right here, the Corwin Amendment, Lincoln said that it was protect slavery where it currently existed, and he would have no objection to being expressed as is and irrevocable. And he also said that if the Union could be freed, he would, if the slaves were not freed, he would be for keeping the
South. If he could end the Civil War without freeing the slaves, he would do so.
That's exactly right.
He wanted to end the rebellion. That was his first objective.
Yes, but he was also a white supremacist. He said that I am not or ever have been in favor of making voters jurors or of Negroes or qualifying them to hold office or to intermarry with white people. In addition, he said that the white should always be superior over. So it is not just a Southern, it was all white.
All right, so we're going to come back from this break. We're going to hear from our history professor from UTSA, Patrick Kelly, who will try to put that into context, what you're saying there. And we're going to continue this conversation about our Confederate monument in Travis Park. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the Confederate monument in Travis Park, whether it should stay or if it should go. And we just heard from John McCammon. He's the president of the Confederate Cemetery Association here in San Antonio. And he was expressing some quotes that we have from President Lincoln talking about his views about race equality. And apparently, and Mr. McCammon wants to stress that maybe President Lincoln wasn't as he called him a white supremacist. So Patrick Kelly, a professor of history at UTSA, can you sort of give us more context?
Well, I completely agree with John that slavery was a national disgrace. Can you hear me?
Yes, try that again.
Oh, that slavery was a national disgrace. A lot of Northerners got rich off of Southern cotton, and it was true in Great Britain as well. But Lincoln did want to end slavery. He just wanted to end it by containing it where it already existed. And so he was an abolitionist. He just differed in tactics. He did not want to go to war with the South when he became president. And he did make some statements that today would be considered racist. There's no doubt about it. But given the context of the time, he was certainly a racial moderate. But historians, when they interpret Lincoln today, they interpret him as an abolitionist that just had different, more gradualist tactics than abolitionists that were called the immediatists, such as William Lord Garrison.
All right. So, John, let me ask you, why is it important that you bring that up, with those quotes from President Lincoln?
Can I just say one more thing? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Because
two wrongs don't make a right. So equating Lincoln by bringing Lincoln in, and let's just be clear here, Lincoln did end up signing the Emancipation Proclamation, and under his presidency, slavery did end. And I think that's really the story.
All right, Professor. Now, John, why bring that up?
Okay, because it's being defined as a Southern issue here, and Lincoln was doing the Emancipation Proclamation after the Battle of Antietam, and it was for political purposes. And had the South won that and it gone the other way, he would have made a deal with the South had it gone the other way. But again, I want to emphasize that if we have Lincoln as a white supremacist, and that's what he is in his writings here, saying that it should always be the white over the black in all positions, and that they should not be jurors or voters, and they should not intermarry. To me, that is the definition. So therefore, as one of the call-ins said earlier, we need to be looking down and taking down the Lincoln Street the Lincoln Street signs, all of the schools, off of the Penny, the Lincoln Monument.
Okay.
So you have to look at it from both sides, and
well,
we can't
be
so narrow-minded.
Let's take one monument at a time, okay? Let's get some callers in on this. This is Maureen, and Maureen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'd just like to say that I am a UTSA student. I am one of the co-organizers with SAT Explorer. We helped organize the rally that was for the removal of the statue. And given the context of the discussion that we've been having, I'd like to note something. This wasn't we were pro-Union and they were pro-Confederate. this nation has a history of white supremacy, and that's not something that we were defending. But to have monuments dedicated to people who were resilient about their dedication to white supremacy and slavery is something that speaks volumes. As the professor read, the professor read the statement from the Texas Declaration of Causes, Texas made it very clear that this was about slavery and this is about white supremacy, and that monument speaks to that. It speaks to terrorize the black communities, and it has a legacy of making it clear to black communities, especially in San Antonio in this case, that they are not welcome in this city. And that's something that we need to abolish and make it an inclusive city for everybody, not just people who have a heritage in the Confederacy.
All right, Maureen, thank you for the call. Now let's hear from Rusty, and Rusty's called in. Rusty, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank y'all for letting me on. And I'm an ex-student of Professor Kelly's. I have a lot of respect for him. And y'all are actually getting most of my questions answered, but I've got a real problem with throwing with 4 years of the Confederacy owning 300 years of negative black history. And I think the problem is we keep turning this into such a negative point with the statue and stuff, and nobody's talking about how we're going to make anyone's life better. So I think my question is probably more for Joey about it seems to me that we're wasting dollars and missing an opportunity to use all this positive energy out there for a positive good, because, you know, secession does not equal war, and the black experience in America has certainly had lots of bad things attached to it. So I just throw that out for everybody. My questions kind of got answered, Irby, with y'all talking.
Can you define your question for Joey again? What do you want him to answer?
I'm not sure what the question was.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was kind of getting off track here. Joey, I think the snag is that, let's say, you know, New Orleans spent $2 million. I don't know how much we'll have to spend to move ours. But we spend, you know, $100,000 to move ours. Isn't that crazy? Travis Park is full of homeless people. The city is full of real needs, from drug addiction to unwed mothers to families. And no matter what budget the money comes from, money's still going to get put to move a monument if that happens, as opposed to helping people.
Okay. I think I get it. So do you think that you look at the city budget, you see how much of the city budget are we talking about here?
That's unknown. I don't think anybody has actually put a price tag on what it would cost to remove the monument if that were the case. The city is talking about its budget proposals, some of the departments today, actually, and tomorrow. I haven't seen anything come up about where the money would come from to potentially relocate the monument. But you could imagine it would be probably in maybe several thousand dollars, but the exact amount has never been mentioned.
John McCammon, president of the Confederate Cemetery Association, you said in your op-ed, and you said again earlier today, that this is a vocal minority. You're convinced this is not an outpouring of a substantial percentage of the population of San Antonio. Is that right?
I think that that vocal minority is.
How do you know that? Do you have polling or anything?
Well, there's been two rallies that I'm aware of. I went to the first one on July the 4th. There were 13 people there. The second one had 43 people there on Thursday. So until we had the rally on Saturday, that pretty much says that it's a very small minority. And for Mr. Shaw and Trevino to give this much importance to a small group like that, it's concerning to me.
Yeah, and so would you be open to adding things to that monument or around it, next to it, that would give more context to the history of what was San Antonio like during the Civil War?
You know, if that were what San Antonio were like during the Civil War, but not defining what the monument is, I would be for that.
So if there was like a...
I would be for a Martin Luther King monument to be put up in the park over there, the quadrant that we were in or the quadrant that the other group was in. I'd donate money to it.
So we had an email from Terry saying maybe we had like a monument to Harriet Tubman or Frederick Douglass, other people, maybe a slave block showing how slaves were mistreated. Would that be something that you would welcome?
Oh, if they wanted to put one up for Martin Luther King or Harriet Tubman, that would be fine. But to make this a definition, and I believe it's a very narrow definition, that this was a racist monument. Again, I go back to my ancestors. It's lest we forget our Confederate dead.
Okay, and Fernando was on the line. Fernando, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, my father's grandfather was Confederate, and he's buried in Waco. And believe me, that's a history we need to forget. That's a history that's not important. That's a history that hurts, and it's painful now and forever. And believe me, this is not a minority opinion. This is a majority opinion. I've worked with many communities and many individuals. All you have to do is look at alternative, not even alternative, but other discourses in history. Look at what Dolores Huerta says. MLK has said, Gandhi, Henry David Thoreau, about oppression and about the need to reach out to humanity and be civil, be peaceful and love. And that'll really change your mind and make you understand that this is a bad symbol of hatred and slavery that we need to get beyond. And if we don't remove these monuments, that means we still honor them.
All right. Patrick Kelly, a professor of history at UTSA, closing thoughts?
Well, it just I've just been so moved by the comments. It's great to hear from my current students and my former students at UTSA. These are difficult questions, and I guess the last thing I'd say is it's, what's happened is that much of these demonstrations are really not about the past or even the Civil War. They're really about present-day politics and the polarization of the United States. And the last thing I'll say is the famous Faulkner quote, the past is not, let's see, how did he put it? The past is not past. The past is not dead. It's not even past.
And right. And so, John McCammon, real quickly, your closing thoughts, real quickly.
Quickly. You can hide history or you can teach history, but you can't do both.
Okay. And so, and Joey Palacios, you're going to continue following this. Where do you see this happening? I know we have five public meetings coming up in August.
Right. Those public meetings, though, are for the city's budget. So that won't necessarily talk about the Confederate monument. I think the next point that we're going to actually see the council talk about this is on September 20th. That's the next governance meeting. And for Councilman Shaw and Trevino's request to be considered by the full council, it has to come out of governance. And again, that's on September 20th.
All right. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll continue covering this issue. We want to thank all of our guests, all of our callers. Thank you for having this civil conversation.